The Five Leadership Questions podcast is brought to you by Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Southeastern desires to equip pastors, missionaries, theologians, scholars, and other believers to obey the commands of Jesus to make disciples anywhere and everywhere God calls them to go. They have a wide range of degrees at many levels. Whether you want to become a pastor, missionary, or seminary professor, Southeastern can provide you with the high-quality education and training that you need. Southeastern even provides a number of distance education options for those who are interested but cannot relocate. To learn more, visit sebts.edu/5LQ. Visit sebts.edu/5LQ and apply today to begin your education. Use the code 5LQ to receive a discount on your application for any degree. Again, that's sebts.edu/5LQ. And use the code 5LQ to receive a discount on your application for any degree Southeastern offers. Hey, and welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I am your host, Barnabas Piper. In today's episode, Todd Adkins, the Director of Leadership here at Lifeway, and myself will be talking with Dave Kinneman. Dave is the owner and president of the Barna Group. You're probably familiar with them, even without necessarily knowing it, through a lot of the research that they do. Barna is one of the leading research groups specifically on faith and culture trends, church trends, things like that. So he has been with the company for 21 years and been the owner for the last several years. Dave is also the author of several books. He's co-authored three with Gabe Lyons, who we actually had on the podcast several weeks ago. They co-authored Unchristian and then another book called You Lost Me. And then their most recent, and this is a very timely book given the cultural climate and the political climate in our country right now, is called Good Faith, Being a Christian When Society Thinks You're Irrelevant and Extreme. So given everything going on in the country right now with varying opinions and the pushback against Christian conviction, this book is especially timely, talking about cultural engagement and how to live out one's faith in a way that is faithful to Christ, but not obnoxiously extreme and over the top. So you hold to convictions, but do so winsomely, graciously, in a lot of ways, the way that Jesus did. So again, that book is called Good Faith. He co-authored that with Gabe Lyons, and it came out just a few months ago. Dave is married and has three kids. They live in California. You can learn more by going to Barna.com. That's Barna.com. That's their company's website. In the conversation that we're about to have, you will hear talk about statistics and you'll hear talk about research, but Dave also gets into just some of his personal lessons in growing as a leader, which I always find really fascinating, just because it's when you hear leaders open up about their experiences, their lessons, some of their more personal growth sides of things. I find that very encouraging because it's one thing to get organizational lessons. It's another thing to hear how God is working in the life of a leader. So I think you'll be encouraged by that as well. He's an engaging person. He's got a lot of great things to say, some good cultural observations, some great family observations as well. So for those who are parents and spouses, that's really beneficial also. So I think you'll very much enjoy this conversation. Here's the conversation Todd and I had with Dave Kinneman. We are here with David Kinneman, who, as you heard in the intro, is the president of the Barna Group and author of the recently released Good Faith book. So, Dave, thanks so much for taking the time out of your day, getting up a little bit earlier on the West Coast to join us on a podcast. So thanks for doing this.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
We have given people the bullet points of all of the things you're excellent at and well known for, but none of that is what makes you you. So would you share with our listeners just a little bit about your story, how you got to your current leadership role, maybe a little bit about your family, some of the things that help people know who we're talking with today?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, sometimes, you know, we start with the very beginning, but I'll do this.
It's a very good place to start.
Yes.
We'll break out into song at the very start of the podcast. So, but I'll go the opposite here and go, my weekend was filled with building some, cabinets for my living room. I love doing woodworking and, dropped a big board on my ankle, which is killing me right now. Which is why the weekend warrior stuff is weekend warrior only. And, so, but anyway, that's a lot of fun. I love building, cabinets and finished carpentry kind of stuff and, played some strategy board games with my son over the weekend. I've got a 12-year-old boy, so he's all into a game called Axis and Allies, which is kind of a throwback.
It's kind of like Risk on steroids, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. And watched a movie with my kids, and I've been traveling a lot, so it's been nice to be home. But so anyway, that's a little bit of a snapshot into my family life. I've got two teenage girls, and just a busy, you know, kind of fun time with them. And
bless you.
Two teenage girls, man, that's a gift from God right there.
It's a gift for your sanctification.
I was going to say, children are a blessing from the Lord, and we should find joy in suffering, and those two maybe should go hand in hand.
I told my daughter a couple months ago, my oldest, my 17-year-old, I said, you know, I love you unconditionally. I just have one condition, which is I hope you have a teenage girl. So anyway, the background for getting into the work was that I actually always felt called to ministry. My dad's a lifelong pastor of a church in Phoenix, and a big church at that. And I always sort of saw myself coming in and leading a church. I didn't really have a lot of game plan for that, but I went off to college, majored in psychology, and then read one of George Barna's books. And the chances that I would have run into one of them are pretty good. He has 50 books currently and counting.
And two or three more every year, it seems like.
I know. It's crazy. He's just such a prolific guy. And so that was really the beginning, the spark that ignited for me the journey of being a researcher, and would love to, say that I find my pastoral calling through this research company. So it's been a lot of fun. I've been here 21 years now.
What does research look like in your context? That's something that I think probably a lot of our listeners have seen sort of the end result, whether it's something as simple as an infographic or a book or something that's been woven into somebody else's writing, because so many people draw on Barna's research. But what does research actually look like? How do you go about doing that?
Well, usually there, you know, we have a kind of two sides of the research we're conducting. One is for clients, where we're looking, you know, on behalf of different organizations to determine something about their market, their constituency, what it looks like to be faithful to their calling, how to serve people. You know, Peter Drucker has these two very critical questions, well, a whole range of questions, but he says, you know, the first question you should ask yourself as an enterprise leader, as a church leader, is, you know, who's our customer and what do they consider to be valuable or important? How do we understand who it is that God's put us on earth to minister to be faithful towards? So, you know, we do a lot of market research. That's our company's work. So that would involve calls with organizational leaders and marketing directors and people that are, you know, figuring out all sorts of very important issues for their organization. And then the other side of the work is stuff that we would conduct on behalf of forward sort of public facing projects. And that's stuff that we fund ourselves and then, you know, release through books and the website and other things. And that looks, you know, there's a little bit more, I'd like to say there's more of a rhythm to that, but, you know, we are, often very busy with our client work. And so when we decide that there's time to do an outward facing book or project, sometimes we it's like the painter's house doesn't get painted, or the general contractor, you know, his kitchen is the one that's not remodeled. So I think there's sometimes where we could do more public facing work, even more books. But I'm not as prolific as George, so we'll take it.
Well, no, I think that helps a lot, just kind of in understanding the place of Barna as well as just kind of what the research actually looks like. I mean, in knowing a little bit about you and looking up your bio, I mean, it says you've done thousands of interviews and things like that. And numbers and stats and research are something that just sort of baffle most people, especially in terms of how they were gathered. So just getting a peek behind the curtain is really helpful.
I can tell you on more than one occasion when, you know, Stetzer was still traipsing around Lifeway, that, and he does traips.
He does. Frolics on occasion.
I've seen it. I have seen it. In all black, no less. We would have interesting conversations about validated research and this and that. So it's... I think I am much better informed about that topic in particular because of that those types of conversations with him. But it's true, not all research, you know, is the same. And it even still, it may have some valid points, but I would think that one of the most difficult struggles when pulling together data is how do you keep yourself out of it? Like, how do you keep your own personal leanings out of the results?
Well, that's I think every researcher has to admit that they have a particular bias in that, it's a strong word, but we all come at these questions with a particular point of view, or at least a certain sort of audience in mind, if we're being honest. And I think, even academics will have a certain, group to whom they're holding themselves accountable, whether that's a peer review process or the notion of being published. And so I often think that research, when it's used in a prophetic way for the local church, is helping a leader do his or her job better. And that's, that's a very honorable way of using research. It's in some ways the very best. It's like, I think of the times, like imagine if we do 50,000 interviews in a year and each of those 50,000 people give us 15 minutes. I mean, that's an enormous number of hours that we are receiving more than 12,000 hours people are contributing to the, this data set. And I feel about the stewardship of that. It's like, boy, the last thing I want to do is to use that precious time from people and just write a book. I really hope that it can help people become better leaders, more efficient communicators, more faithful in their calling. And so I often think about how important it is that research accomplishes a particular goal. It helps a pastor or a leader make better decisions and be more clear about what God is calling him or her to do.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and get to our first question and ask, what really, who are you learning from right now?
Well, that's a great question. I've been reading a lot of really good books. But one of my favorites in the last couple of months is by General Stanley McChrystal called Team of Teams.
Yes, yes.
It's been a great book about thinking about complexity, and we're actually using that as one of the key themes for an event we're doing in January called Leading in Complexity, the State of Pastors, and we're going to do a free webcast, and you can check out more on our website about that. But this notion of complexity is a really critical idea that, it's very hard to predict the direction of these sort of not just the trends, but like how one thing will happen that affects a whole different thing. You think about just all sorts of different things that pop up that we wouldn't have anticipated. So I've been really learning a lot from that on a personal level, maybe a more close to home level. I've been learning a lot from a guy who's been a longtime advisor, and he's just joined our company for a kind of a short-term stint. He was with the Disney organization for about 20 years, and it's been really cool to see, how a guy who's just got incredible, his name is Steve Macbeth, he's got just incredible wisdom about business and leadership and organizational structure. It's been really a pleasure at our stage of our business development. I bought the business from George Barna 7 years ago, and leading it and trying to grow it. And we've had a lot of success, but a lot of things, a lot of tough lessons we've had to learn. And so it's been really cool to have a person who's got this experience and this intellect come alongside and really help me think about the problems and opportunities that we face.
What are some of the things that, if you don't want to delve too much into detail, because it's, it's organizationally specific or sensitive, that's fine. But what are some of the things that advisor has kind of opened your eyes to or helped you work through? And what are some of those things you've learned?
Well, I think a whole range of things, but some of them, the difference between leading and managing, I've understood the concept behind that. But to see it in practical terms as to the way I would spend my, hours and the time I'd make available and how I make myself available and how I lead our key executives, the sort of the importance for me to lead at this period of our company's efforts. And that doesn't mean that I get a pass on managing. It just means that I have to be very focused in the ways that I that I lead, and then also have sufficient capacity on the team to manage the team. So we talked a lot about that. We talk a lot about, you know, sort of the right size of our organization and our pipeline and different kinds of functional aspects of our organization's work. We've been doing a fair amount of work overseas, especially in the UK, but also in Australia and a couple mm-hmm. of other places. And so, you know, really thinking about what's the right next step for some of those things, for some of those aspects of our business to grow. I think, you know, the main thing is to, you know, he said something a couple of weeks ago as we've been, you know, wrestling through a whole range of things. He's like, man, you could transform this business by doing half the things you're trying to do and just focusing on the few things that, you know, you really have to do. And so that's been really helpful. You know, it's like, and so I've gotten to teach back to him in certain things. He said, well, what if we try this? Like, well, let's not do it. It's one extra thing. Let's just be really focused about the next right thing that we need to do. And I think a lot of times leaders have, you know, they have no shortage of ideas. It's really so much the value is in the execution and being focused and disciplined. So he's really helped yeah. me be clear about that. And that's not about having the rest of the team focused and disciplined. It turns out that's the focus and discipline that the leader, you know, has to bring.
Well, that actually sets up our second question really well, because it, you know, you're talking about honing in on those things that you either have to do or those things that you you and your team are particularly well equipped for. And the question is simply, what is the main point of emphasis for your leadership right now, either as a team, so leading the team, or for yourself and growing as a leader? And so it seems like those two concepts may fit well together. But what is that main point of emphasis?
Well, I think given there's probably two. I know you're asking for a main point, but there's two that I think make sense just given what I just said to you. That the first on the management side, we're really trying to build into the people on the team and get them trained, you know, even more trained. And you know, our team is like tripled in 2 years, so we're, you know, we've got a lot of newer folks on the team, and I think I've taken for granted, you know, how important it is for people to learn a culture and how long it takes for those things to develop. And so, you know, a lot of development, training, getting people in the right lanes, you know, being clear and direct about areas that are deficient in their skill set or in their, you know, attitude or, you know, whatever. And then on the other side, the outward facing part of the business, and on the leadership side, you know, being more and more clear about what does it mean to be a thought leader, just a world-class research company. What relationships do I need to continue to develop, and, you know, sort of partnerships. And, you know, we're going to be focusing on pastors in 2017 in a big mm-hmm. way as a thematic. We want to continue to focus on millennials and on Generation Z coming into 2017. So, you know, being really clear then about how to, you know, continue to grow the profile of the organization, and, you know, how to best use my time in doing that. So those are a couple of examples, both internally focused and externally focused.
I would highly encourage people, if they are considering doing surveys with their church or figuring out the spiritual health of their church or even what they really value, to use somebody like you guys to help figure that out, because so many huge decisions in churches are made based on three emails that yeah. somebody receives. So anyway, I just wanted to kind of confirm and affirm that before asking our third question, which is what obstacles are you currently facing right now?
Well, first, I just have to acknowledge that I love all the nerd talk.
About oh, dude, so. Everybody who listens to this already knows I'm a nerd. So,
well, my it's fun because my girls are real into their science classes at school, and so my wife and I will look at each other as they're going back and forth about different genetics and size of electrons and whatnot. It's so cute. We say, hey guys, at the dinner table, like, there's only so much nerd talk allowed. So, you know, the obstacles that I'm facing, you know, I'm beginning to realize how much the obstacles are things that, you know, I could say it's interesting, like it's money or it's time or it's, you know, certain things. The Lord has really had me on a journey to understand how much His favor is at the heart of a leader's journey. And, you know, for 7 years, I've been here for 21 years, been the owner of the company for seven. And I could just say that I've seen the Lord's favor in so many, you know, month after month in the work. And so the obstacles for me, I mean, we face a number of them, and as much as anything, it's things that I'm contributing, my own lack of focus. I work really hard, so it's not as though if I just work harder, I think that's one of the problems that I've had to overcome through the years, that the obstacles are something to be just surmounted through extra effort. And, you know, I've worked so many nights and weekends and, you know, sometimes that is called for, cause you just have a project that has to get done. But I've sort of like Steve McBeth's comment to me 2 weeks ago, like, we can transform the business by working at the right things at the right time, and to rely on God's favor, not our own power, to try to solve things. So I think those are some of the lessons that I'm learning right now, is that, the obstacles, you know, we just got a chance to preview a new movie that's coming out called Silence. It's based on the classic work of Japanese fiction by Shusaku Endo. And really the whole note, it's coming out. It's a Martin Scorsese film. It's got, Liam Neeson in it, and it's really about Portuguese priests who were trying to create who are missionaries to Japan, and sort of the challenges that they face, and the theology of suffering, that God actually transforms us. Obstacles aren't just things linebackers who we just have to run through. But that the notion of obstacles are actually part of the suffering that God uses in our lives to create the kind of character he wants in us. And this movie is a really powerful example of that, a rich Christian theology of suffering. And so that'd be my kind of comments on that. I think that we need to recover, and the Lord's really, I don't know the first thing about this. I've got friends who, have lost their kids, who are going through very painful experiences in their lives. And so suffering isn't just, like I said, like a linebacker to run through an obstacle. Isn't just a linebacker to, have the right kind of low center of gravity so you can just make it through. I was talking to a neighbor kid, he's in his early 20s, but his family's going through a really rough time. And, he's not a Christian, but a really great, great guy. And so he said that, I told him that I thought that this whole moment of his parents struggling with the divorce could be a real defining moment for him. And he said, yeah, I've been really thinking about that phrase, what doesn't kill me makes me stronger. And, I said to him, what if that's only half true, Connor? What if the better way to understand that is the suffering that you go through is going to actually make you into the person, that you were made to be, and that it's going to help define the kind of way you would approach suffering in the future and challenging circumstances. So anyway, that'd be what I've been learning about obstacles and, the deeper story, the deeper thing that God wants to do in us and through us in yeah. facing and surmounting those challenges.
How has this process of learning, how's that impacted your leadership in your organization? I mean, maybe that's a hard line to connect, because all personal growth and personal development and character growth will play itself out in leadership. But have you seen any kind of observable ways that it's helped you as a leader?
Well, I think some of the stuff around how we view suffering is a newer set of things for me that the Lord's been showing me. So I wouldn't say there's a way that's working itself out yet. I agree with you that it should have some long-term impact on the way that I lead. I guess there's a certain sort of looseness with which I hold. I mean, listen, it's been so cool to see the Lord bless this company and bless, what's happening here. And yet there's at the same token, there's a sense of, the faster we grow, sometimes the harder it is to feel like we're making the right kind of progress. And, like we've been growing a lot as a company, but that creates all sorts of different challenges. And so in a manner of speaking, it's like, rather than simply seeing all those challenges as obstacles to be undone, we're trying to say, okay, what does the Lord want us to do and be faithful in? How do we learn to be grateful and to acknowledge God's favor for the growth we've experienced and not simply frustrated with the obstacles that we have as a bigger, you know, now that we're a bigger organization, if we can only be twice our size, you know, it's like there's a certain, I think, level of just acknowledgement of the Lord's favor and faithfulness that, you know, helps me to feel a little bit differently about the nature of the problems that we face.
Well, no, that helps quite a bit just in terms of putting it in context. We are going to change context a little bit now in terms of, you know, we've been talking specifically about organizational leadership and a lot of nerdy research talk and things like that. And we're going to you mentioned your family. You're married. You have two teenage daughters. And I think you said a 12-year-old son. And we're going to go into that context. And the question is, what does leadership in your home look like? So with teenagers and a preteen, I imagine leadership looks like a challenge, but what is kind of how does it play itself out on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I think first to acknowledge just, you know, the Lord has you know, my partnership with my wife, Jill, and our love for each other and the fun things that we get to do. And really, you know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, being fully present to the kids as they're going through, you know, our daughter's in her senior year, we're doing college trips, and, you know, my middle daughter plays for the basketball team, and, you know, our son is involved in water polo and all sorts of fun stuff. And so being fully present to those and being really careful about not making our kids are a kind of its own type of idol, and really focusing on, you know, trips and activities and nights away as a couple. You know, my wife does a little bit of bookkeeping for the company. And so, you know, we've, I think, grown a lot in the 7 years about, you know, that she knows, and she's present to what's happening in the business on a financial level, but she's also done a good job of being, you know, prayerful and supportive as I travel and lead the company. But she's also, you know, we try not to make, on the same token, our conversations about our, you know, about the work, about our shared work. And I think for a pastor or for any leader, it's really hard to find that right tension point between, I use that as opposed to balance, because I think the word of balance is can be overused, because there's times, there's seasons where we really do have to be, as a couple, really focused on, hey, what's happening here in our shared ministry. And then there's others where, you know, we have to be really cautious about not making the ministry our, you know, an idol, just like we would make our kids an idol or whatever. And so that's one example of one thing we work hard at, and, you know, we do okay at. I think we're just being able to talk about it, like, you know, during a meal together, you know, it's just inevitable that we'll talk about what's happening at the company or other things. We have to say, hey, that's enough of that, and let's move on to a new topic, and, you know, enjoy each other's company beyond the things that our lives revolve around.
How have you, I mean, it sounds from the way that you've talked about it, that you really do enjoy spending time with your kids, and they sound like they enjoy spending time with you. And that, I think that's something that those of us with younger kids look ahead and say, well, how do we do that? Because that's not always the case with teenagers. So what are some of just the practical ways that you and your wife have maybe created a family environment that your kids like to be around you and you like to be around them?
Yeah, that's a cool thing. I've never really thought about that a lot. I mean, a couple of things that strike me about that. I mean, with teenagers and with two girls, you know, especially with my oldest, I've had to have a couple common conversations with her through the years, where as she began to act in that sort of, you know, dismissive teenage way, I've had to say, listen, Emily, let's just agree that that's not, you know, I'll be careful not to be the lecturing dad, and you can call me on that. And I can call you on being the dismissive, petulant teenager. Let's just choose not to have that narrative in our house. And, you know, like, we'll have our moments where we're not at our best, and, you know, we can still love each other unconditionally, except that you'll have a teenage daughter someday. But we can, you know, so I remember moments where we kind of like almost zoomed out and said, what is this, what we want? No, it's really not what either of us want. So let's choose a different path. We have had counseling, and we have, you know, talked about our ways of being together. It's not been easy. You know, we still have things that we struggle with. I think finding as a parent, finding things that your kids enjoy doing, more than simply things that you want to do with them is really critical. So, you know, my kids love hiking and being outdoors. I actually can't stand camping.
You're what Jim Gaffigan calls indoorsy.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you know, I've really learned to just enjoy it for the kids' sake. You know, we hiked to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, and I've spent more nights this year in a tent than I think any years previous combined. And it's like, you know, I still don't love it, but it's, you know, it's fun to do it with the kids. And so, you know, I think that's part of the definition of doing life together is, you know, allowing ourselves to be stretched.
All right. I'm going to move us on now to question five. And that is you've got some children that are about to enter this age bracket. So, this may be more poignant right now. What would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead and why?
Well, I think one of the things I'm really noticing in this season of my life is, 42, I'm realizing how many of the things that I'm currently experiencing favor in, you know, I mean, certainly they all come from God and promotion comes from God. So, I mean, I didn't aspire to be president, owner of Barna the day that I started here. You know, even in trying to buy the business, that's a whole long story, but you know, I wasn't really trying to purchase the business outright. There were several things I was trying to solve, and I went to George and started the conversation about what the future of the business would look like. And so promotion comes from the Lord is one of the key things that I've learned, that, you know, to be self-promoting, to be, I mean, we could talk about our work, we should be clear about the things we're doing, and it's not self-promoting to do that, but promotion comes from God. And as part of that, you know, it really does take sometimes years of work that I think I probably misunderstood. I think in those moments where I was most immature in those early years, it was that I thought that I could, you know, go out and do things before I was really ready to do them. And there's a certain sort of, you know, I think it's a pretty rare thing to be at a company for 21, almost 22 years now. And I don't think that's like some sort of God ordained, like everyone should be at a company for that long necessarily, but there is something that's really fun about that. In that, you know, you start to realize that, that the process of learning things actually produces its own momentum. And I've got relationships and experiences and skills and, things that I'm still growing in, but you know, like I'm excited about where the Lord might take this business over the next decade. Because we've got just such an incredible foundation. You know, we handled our succession between, you know, founder and second generation really well. And we learned a lot of tough lessons. But, you know, promotion and trying to be, you know, clear about the fact that building a business or building ourselves, all that is in and through and by Jesus, and because of his, you know, his work in us, not because we're so talented. So those are a couple things.
Well, I think that's a really helpful place to land this. I think one of my favorite things about that last question is the way that people can share perspective they have picked up over time. So for some people we've talked to, they're 10 or 12 years removed from their 20s. For other people, they're 40 or 50 years removed, and others kind of fall in the middle. But that perspective is helpful because it holds true over time. And so I think, you know, time is really the main thing that a lot of 20-year-olds lack is that the wisdom that occurs by living life and those kinds of things. So thank you for sharing that. And thanks for all the time that you've spent with us answering these questions and sharing about research and a little bit of scientific nerdery that made Todd smile. Yes. And probably a few of our listeners as well. So really appreciate the time, Dave.
No problem. I love the word nerdery.
it's one of my favorites because you can apply it in so many different directions. For listeners, the book, David and Gabe Lyons recently released the book Good Faith, Being a Christian When Society Thinks You're Irrelevant and Extreme. You can find that. We'll have it in our show notes. I think I just mispronounced the word irrelevant.
You did.
I'm a hack. So let me try that again. Good Faith, Being a Christian When Society Thinks You're Irrelevant and Extreme. There, I did it.
You did it.
So we'll have that in our show notes. You can also go to Barna.com to see more about the work that Dave and the team are doing there. If you go to lifeway.com/leadership, that's where we have our show notes. You can find additional episodes of the podcast, like the one that we did with Gabe a few weeks ago. And you can check out our blog. You can check out additional downloads and webinars and things like that that we have as well. So that's lifeway.com/leadership. Thanks so much for listening, and tune in next time.
Don't forget to check out Southeastern Seminary's numerous education and training opportunities to help you grow in ministry. Visit sebts.edu/5LQ to learn more. That's sebts.edu/5LQ.